Today's mailbag is from Anonymous. Control. I can't recall the last time I was truly in control of my life, schedule, day, body, family, and career. Then I joined the Sunday Basket Club to gain some control. Because as Lisa says, to stop the flood of new stuff coming in. To give it a safe home until I could get to it. I see that being in control over when I address tasks, mail, ideas, has made me aware of controlling other things too. I think life was out of control for so long that I forgot that I can put on the brakes. I can be in control. The holiday blitz. I don't have to cook, decorate, or celebrate to the ninth degree. Everything I can ask loved ones, and I can delegate, and I can opt out, and I can still be in control. Thank you, Lisa. Thank you to the Organized 365 team. Thank you to the Organized 365 community. Going into the holidays and beyond, so grateful because I am in control.
Do you have an Organized 365 success story? If so, we would love to hear about it. Please send us an email at customerservice@organized365 and tell us how you have taken back your home, your paper, and your life with Organized 365.
In reading the academic literature that is out on home organization, household work, who's doing the work, etc., etc., in our research, we found a study that said that men view organization, home organization, as an optional hobby undertaken by women. I wholeheartedly disagree. Organization is where time comes from. But, you know, neither here nor there. We'll keep working on our own Organized 365 research. The act of getting organized, of getting your paper organized, is a Herculean task. No one wants to do it, other than me. They're like, less than 1% of the people on the planet, not a research statistic, just a guess, of people who really enjoy going through file cabinets and organizing paper. I am one of those people. And the act of getting all of the papers out of your files into binders does appear to be hobby work when you're doing it proactively. Because when you are doing it proactively and there is no urgent need for this paper, there's always another way you could spend this time. But I promise you that in the future, when you need this paper and it's already in the binders, you are going to be thanking your lucky stars that you took the time to do the paper solution now. And in these four podcast episodes, I'm going to deep dive into each of the binders, why they were created, how I have used them in the past or am using them now, and why they will really save your sanity going forward. All right, are you ready? Let's dive into that paper pile together. Welcome to the Organized 365 podcast. I'm your host, professional organizer, productivity expert, and motivational speaker, Lisa Woodruff. This podcast will help you embrace progress over perfection and create lasting functional organizing in your home. I have so much to share with you, so let's get started. Binder number one, the household operations binder. Okay, why, Lisa? Why is this binder number one? Well, it's binder number one because it is the first binder that I ever made. Way before I even really realized that I made binders. So on the Wednesday podcast episodes, I always ask, the very first question is, how did you first find Organized 365? And I let people know I'm going to ask this because sometimes we have to go into the recesses of our mind to remember, how did you stumble across Organized 365 the first time? And occasionally, people will mention Fly Lady. They will say, oh, back in the day, I did Fly Lady. Well, back in the day, I did Fly Lady too. And I remember exactly when I found Fly Lady. It was right when I made the Sunday basket. So Joey was 2 and Abby was 6 months. I was so overwhelmed with life. And I got my paper pile organized by laying everything out on the family room floor and putting them in the 40 slash pockets, as I've told you, and started the Sunday basket. And that immediately started working for me. However, I didn't have a good structure for my days as a stay-at-home mom slash direct seller slash homeowner slash all of the hats that I was wearing. And all of the hats that I was wearing didn't have good structure to them. Like, I wasn't going to a 9-to-5 job. Direct sales is quasi-entrepreneurship. Like, you know what you're selling. You don't have to create your own product. But you really have to create your own schedule, your own cadence. I just did not have a schedule. I didn't have one. And so when I found Fly Lady, she created that schedule and she had something called a control journal. So this control journal was really like a lesson plan book, was the best I could understand it, because I was a former teacher. I was like, that's what I'm missing. I'm missing a lesson plan book. And so I created a binder, and in there I put our cleaning schedule and I put our meal plan. There was a day when I did meal planning, you guys. For 20 years. I know, you know that I don't cook now, but for 20 years, I did. Meal planning, grocery lists. I think I had our coupons in there. I made little preschool checklists. I did the whole thing. Like, and it was a big 2-inch binder. And I don't know what, I don't know how to explain it to you. I had it on the end of my counter, open, with tabs, and I loved it. Like, I loved coming down in the morning, and she tells you to get your shoes on. I have always gotten dressed and put my shoes on every morning. Like, that's just, I like to wear shoes. I'm not a barefoot person, so that wasn't a problem. She taught you to shine your sink every day. I was quasi-successful at that. And then I had the control journal. And mainly, those are the things that I learned from Fly Lady. She also kept you going, like, on your laundry and things like that. But the amount of reminders that came, at that time it was an email, was just way too many emails. And I was pretty good at staying up on my laundry, so I didn't follow that part of the system. But this idea of a control journal, a binder, a lesson plan book to run your life when your household is your work, was an idea I got from Fly Lady. And so fast forward, because that was in 2002, so fast forward to 2017, 15 years later, we're creating binders for Organize 365, and we're making a medical binder, or a financial binder, and a household reference binder, and the team said we need an operations binder. Well, by now, I'm 45, and I'm not really in those staying at home all of the time, running the kids phase of life. And I was like, oh, yes, I did need that. Like, I needed that binder in my 20s and 30s and in my early 40s. And this binder, the household operations binder, really pairs very well with the productive home solution, active parenting years, establishing your household. These are all of the things that kind of are after the launch binder. You know how the launch binder moves a child from their childhood bedroom at the age of 16 into their adult living space by 25 years old? It gives them just the basics of what they need for their medical, their financial, and their household reference. And a lot of that binder has household operations things in there. So household operations are you being the COO of your household, you being the chief operating officer, and establishing the traditions that your family will have, the rules and the structure for your family. So when I created this, I was really heavy on meal planning and cleaning my house, because that was a big part of my primary responsibility. And in our household operations binder, we have a lot about meal planning. We have how you can plan your meals thematically by week, you could plan them by month. There's just a whole bunch of meal planning worksheets in there that you can use. Also, there's a takeout list. Personally, I love that one right now. So there is meal planning information in there. And there is also cleaning schedules and cleaning information. And I remember, like, in my late 20s and all in my 30s, like, cleaning my house was top of mind. I didn't want to do it, but when I did it, I wanted to do it effectively and efficiently. And there were tasks that I did once a week. There were tasks that I did once a month. And then a couple of times a year, I did more of the deep cleaning tasks, you know, like wiping the baseboards and cleaning the blinds, things like that. And so having these different cleaning checklists really helped me as well. And I would literally use my binder the way I did when I was a teacher on Sunday night. I would flip through the whole binder, see what I needed to do this week, and create a schedule for myself. Which reminds me about Super Nanny. If you've ever watched a Super Nanny episode, that is where this nanny comes into a household where the children are misbehaving. and she helps the children start behaving. And sometimes it's a child issue, but almost always it is a parenting issue. And number one, after she observes the kids for the day and talks to the parents, she comes in at the beginning of the second block after the commercial, and she puts up a big schedule and she says, "You need a schedule." And that was the biggest thing that I took out of that phase of my life was you need a schedule. You need to create a lesson plan for yourself. If you are working from home, parenting from home, homeschooling, you need a schedule. And one of the benefits of going to a 9-to-5 job and actually driving there is the structure that that gives you. I remember during the pandemic, I realized that part of why we all felt so overwhelmed and couldn't escape was because we lost our commutes. Even if you weren't working in a 9-to-5 office, you had some kind of a commute that you weren't allowed to do during the pandemic because you would, you know, even just commute to dropping your kids off at school, or you would commute to getting your groceries, or you would commute, like you would get in your car and you would go places at certain times during the week. You may not have even realized how much of a schedule you had if you primarily spend most of your time at home. You didn't spend all of your time at home. And when you were in the car, your mind gets to wander. You get to pick your music. Like it's a different change of scenery. Your eyeballs see things as you're driving down the road. And I remember quickly in the pandemic, just going for drives. Also, side note, getting nervous I would get pulled over because I was going for drives because nobody was. But my brain needed to just wander, and it couldn't wander when it was inside of our house all of the time. So the household operations binder really helps you make visible the invisible work of being a homeowner, of running a household. So that is cleaning, and that is your meal planning. And then there are some other things that we put in our household operations binder that really light me up and also proactively have saved so much time. So the first, and probably there's, it's actually the last thing in the binder, but it has the most sheets, are all of the holiday worksheets. We have so many holiday planning worksheets. It is awesome. So I remember back in my late 20s, early 30s, had Joey and Abby, and I wanted to have Thanksgiving dinner at my house. I wanted to have Christmas dinner at my house. I wanted to have Mother's Day at my house. Like, I have a home now. I want to be the one where the holidays happen in my house. You have maybe had these same thoughts. What I now know, now that I'm 50 and I am having all of these holidays at my house, I finally, after like, you know, saying, "Hey, how about if we have Thanksgiving at my house?" And everybody's like, "No, we're still going to go to grandma's, or we're still going to go to, you know, your mother-in-law's house." I realized that it wasn't as much about the desire to have the holidays at your house. There were a couple of factors at play. One, it's usually the best cook, which we already know that's not me. And secondly, holidays are expensive. I didn't really calculate how much it would cost to actually buy all the food for the holidays. And of course, you can have potlucks and people bring things, but still, the turkey is not a dollar. The turkey costs money. And, you know, if you have alcoholic beverages, that costs money. And desserts, and just there is a financial cost to having these holidays that I didn't really realize until we started having the holidays. But I did figure out the second thing much sooner. Once I kept desiring to have the holidays in my house and couldn't figure out why I wasn't being given this opportunity, I realized that my mom had just become the person where Thanksgiving was. Like, up until I went to college, we went to grandma's house for Thanksgiving or my aunt's house for Thanksgiving. And then after I graduated college, then we went to my mom's house for Thanksgiving. And so, of course, it's going to be about 20 years before you start coming to my house for Thanksgiving. So sometimes you want to have the big holidays at your house, but it's usually in like your 40s and 50s when the mantle gets passed to you and you start doing these bigger holidays. But I did some of the smaller holidays like Thanksgiving and things like that. When you start having these family parties, the planning of the food becomes extremely complicated. Like, I'm just thinking about Easter. You may not celebrate Easter, but Easter, if you see any of the advertisements on TV, usually are related to eggs. We now know that Grayson is allergic to eggs. We have an EpiPen. We have not had to use it. I hope we never have to use it. But eggs are in everything. I just said to Abby the other day, I said, Abby, mayonnaise is eggs. She goes, I know. I was like, well, I didn't remember. Like, we're checking all the ingredients, like all the ingredients everywhere for this little baby who is allergic to egg. And Abby had a food sensitivity to egg. So for 2 years, I avoided eggs for her, but it wasn't a true, you know, anaphylactic allergy. So I didn't have the same vigilance that I have right now. And also it was a food sensitivity that went away. This allergy is not predicted to go away. So we will be checking out for eggs for a long time. We just had Easter. I did host Easter. And can I just tell you, everything that you make has eggs in it. Think about what you had. We had ham. Grayson could have the ham. Even the potatoes somehow had egg in it. The rolls had egg in it. Like, there's just a lot of egg in a lot of things. And when you are the person that is putting on the party and there is someone in your family that has a food allergy. I remember my uncle was allergic to strawberries and tomatoes. So we always had to know if there were strawberries and tomatoes and things. You need to take on that responsibility as well. And then there's, what are the beverages of choice? Like in your family refrigerator, we have a lot of beverages. Like we have Gatorade, little tiny apple juices and milk for Grayson. Joey likes ICB root beer. So whenever he comes over, we usually have that. I like Arnold Palmer, which is like it's a mix of iced tea and lemonade. So we have all that. And that's all the non-alcoholic drinks that we have. When you get into, if you're going to have alcohol at this event, everybody has their own thing that they like. Like, even when you do wine, usually people have different wines that they like. And absolutely, of course, you could just say, here's going to be our one alcoholic drink of choice. But think about when you go to your families, like whenever we went to either of our families or any of our family, I'm thinking of all my families of origin, there was an open bar. Like there was all the different kinds of alcohol there. That's expensive to have and it's expensive to stock. So my sister and I were talking the other day. She says, hi, by the way. She said, oh, I have to come on the podcast and tell this story. So I'm just going to tell it. I won't tell it as good as she tells it, but I'm just going to tell it. So my sister started having a derby party. And I said to the team, that'd be fun. We should have a derby party. So we're gonna have one. Then I realized the derby's on Saturday. Oh, well, we'll have it ended the day Friday. It'll be fine. So my sister was talking about how she started a couple of years ago having this derby party. And of course, she has the household operations binder. And she was getting ready to prepare for the derby party this year and also the Masters, which is another golf thing. She was having a Masters dinner and then she was having a derby party. So she went to her household operations binder and she pulled out her notes from last year. She said, oh my gosh, this is great. She said, okay, so for the derby party last year, I wrote down how many people RSVP'd and how many of those people RSVP'd on the day of the event and how many people no-showed. Now, little side comment, you should RSVP. That means you should tell people if you are coming and you should tell them if you're coming before the day of. Now, you might be waiting to see if something better comes along or if you feel like going, but those are not two good reasons not to RSVP. Also, if you verbally RSVP, like I was invited to a wedding, it was an out-of-town wedding. There was a very low likelihood I could go. As soon as I got the invitation, I told the person, I'm so sorry, I'm not going to be able to attend this wedding. So I had verbally RSVP'd. You need to, when you get the invitation, actually RSVP again. So I went on the little, you know, everything for weddings now is done by QR code. Went on the little QR code and politely declined and then still sent a gift because you should. You just should. So you need to RSVP. And if you know you're going, tell people as soon as possible. So I got a save the date. My uncle is getting married in the fall. So I got a save the date and I went, and it's an out of town wedding. Also, I went on the information for the wedding. Turns out I could get the hotel now. So I got the hotel now. Turns out I can RSVP now. They haven't even sent out the invitations. I RSVP'd. And then I noticed my aunt and uncle had already done the same. Clearly, they went on the website as well. It's never too early to RSVP. So I will get a wedding invitation because you get them at least 6 weeks in advance. And I'll think, okay, we're going to go or we're not going to go, but I'm going to wait a bit because I don't want to seem too overeager to have RSVP'd right away. Let me just tell you, There is no one planning a wedding that thinks you can RSVP too soon. They need to know how many chickens they're going to need. So let them know. If you can't go, it's not going to be that you can all of a sudden go 5 weeks from now. You still are not going to be able to go. So just politely decline and say, I'm so sorry, I can't come. You don't have to tell them why. You can, you don't have to, but just politely decline and just send a gift or send a check or do whatever your family does for weddings. So anyway, back to my sister's story. The derby party. So now she said, I know who is coming and who's not coming. Also, based on their history of who knows how to RSVP and who doesn't. It's not an old thing, people. We still do it. Still tell people. She said, here's the best part. I wrote down everything I made, where I got it, how much it cost, and how much was eaten. She said, this is fabulous. I handmade these four things. Only two went, and you know, like went as in like people ate them. They ate all of them. Two of them, it was a kind of meh, so I don't need to make those at all. The things that she store-bought, she said two of them totally went, so, you know, sold them out. Everybody ate them. And another one was just kind of meh. She goes, okay, great. So I'm going to do the two store-bought things, the two homemade things. I'm not going to do the other two homemade things. I'm not going to do this one store-bought thing. She had down how much alcohol was drank, everything. She said, I'm going to save so much money doing this year because I know exactly what to buy. And when you are having a party, let me just take a little bit of stress off of you. No one knows what you're going to serve. No one remembers what you served last year. Nobody knows what you're going to serve next year. So if you serve something and it's not popular 1 year, but three people liked it, you don't have to make it the next year because three people at your party of 30 liked something that you made. Just serve what you know a lot of people will eat. Now, with that said, if it's your family and Thanksgiving, you're going to make a whole bunch of stuff that only two people in your family want, but if they don't want it, then it's no longer Thanksgiving for them anymore. And in that case, they can bring it with them and share it with everybody else here who may or may not want it, but you don't need to make it for them. So you don't have to make your family's wishes come true. You're not a genie. You're just the person providing the space for the party. So these are ways in which the operations binder really can save you time and money by not only planning. The most important part of the party is the follow through. Another golf analogy. When my dad was teaching me golfing, there are two things you need to remember. Number one, Lisa, keep your head down. So whenever I would go to hit the ball, I'd pop my head up to see where the ball was going to go before I hit the ball. He's like, Lisa, keep your head down. So then I got to the point where I'd just swing and I'd keep staring at the tee until Dad would say, okay, you can look at your ball now. So I'd go look at the ball. And then the second thing, once I finally kept my head down, he would say, Lisa, follow through. Because I'd hit the ball and I'd stop swinging. Like I'd just have this little bit of a follow through. He's like, keep your head down, follow through. Keep your head down, follow through. And that is true when you are planning anything. Keep your head down. You're going to have this party. You're going to do this event. You need to plan it to your best of your ability. And then at the end, when the dishes are done, follow through. Follow through with your swing. Go through. What was eaten? What wasn't eaten? Did people come on time? How late did they stay? What did you wear? What did you enjoy? What didn't you enjoy? What would you do different next time? Write this down the day after, because next year when you do this again, you're not going to remember. You think you're going to remember. You're not going to remember. Write it down. Write it down. Write it down. Just finished my first term of my PhD, and I spent the last day of the term going through and cleaning up all of the articles that I had read and keeping the ones that I might want for the next time and reviewing the syllabuses to make sure I didn't miss anything and going through my new syllabuses and changing out my calendar and changing out my slash pockets, following through that last piece, the following through on any big event that you just did is super important. At the office, we're doing this now. We just finished homeschool conventions for this spring and we're having a big debrief meeting. What went well? What didn't go well? What would we do next year? If we had to do it right now, what would the booth look like? Because I guarantee you when we're ordering booth supplies next January, we are not going to remember what is so clear in our head right now. So events, holidays, eventually you will be the person hosting all of the holidays and it will be fabulous, and write it all down so that they can go as easily as possible. another thing that we have inside of our household operations binder that I have used one slash pocket up until this point, but now I hope it becomes half of the binder, is travel. So we are very blessed. Greg's family lives in Florida, and so his dad and his dad's family live in Florida. So every year in July, we go down and we see them for a week, and we always have. And when the kids were until they were 16, we drove. Like, I think the first two times we flew with Joey, and as soon as Abby was born, we were like, okay, we drive now, because there's no other way to get a double stroller and a packet play. You know what I'm talking about. So we drove to Florida for 18 years. And when we drove to Florida, there was like, I mean, we were literally moving. It was like we were moving our house to go to Florida for a week. And we had to have what we needed in the hotel on the way down and on the way back. And then also what we needed at the condo. And then what we needed by the ages of the kids. And we're in Ohio. Like, the sun, it graces us once in a while. What I consider a sunny day is a cloudy day in Florida. And I always forget that. Like, you need hats, you need glasses, you need sunscreens, you need floaties. There's just so many things that you need in Florida that you're never going to need in Ohio. And so since we're driving there and back, I started making lists of everything I was taking with me. And then I would leave those in this slash pocket over the school year. And as we got to the next summer, starting in June, I would start a laundry basket in the laundry room for Florida. And I would just keep putting things in there for 6 weeks until we actually got in the minivan and made the trek each year. These checklists that I would refine every single year just sped up the process of preparing for and not needing to buy extra things when we got to Florida every year. Those trips to Florida were such a blessing and yet so financially hard for us when our kids were little. So I had calculated it was $700, consistently $700 for us to actually get to Florida and back. So the gasoline for the car, the two hotel rooms that we would need, the fast food that we would get on the way down. We've tried the packing the cooler thing. We're just not cooler families. One year I did it and Greg was like, this is kind of nice. And I pulled out the sandwiches and he was like, we're getting Wendy's. I was like, okay, good, because I wanted Wendy's too. So we're just not that level of frugal. So $700. And for many years, such a blessing. Our father-in-law would pay for our condo. And when we went out to meals, like, Greg's grandfather was still alive, so he would pay for the meals. And we would go to the grocery store. And at first, I was like counting that grocery store as part of the travel money. But actually, if we were in Ohio, we would have to go to the grocery store too. And so I would bring in the car all of the non-perishable food so that I didn't have to buy it in Florida at a little bit of elevated prices. And I brought all my coupons and I did couponing in Florida. And I think usually about $1,200 is what we would spend all said and done by the time we were done with that trip. And that was, I mean, we would save all year and then we would pay off the credit cards in order to do that trip. And so planning for that trip was so fun, but also a lot of work, because I would start in June thinking like, okay, bring everything you need for the condo. We still do this even if we fly. We bring the Ziploc bags, a couple pieces of foil, two dishwasher tabs, you know, all that in like one Ziploc bag. We'll bring a little bit of dish soap. I bring a Brillo pad, because otherwise, when you're in Florida, you have to buy a whole box of Brillo pads to get one Brillo pad. You have to buy a whole box of dishwasher detergent to run the dishwasher twice while you're there. I used to bring my own Tide, but then I realized I do so much laundry down there. Just buy a whole package of Tide because you're going to be done with it before you're done. I still bring our Bounce dryer sheets. So I'll count out like 20 dryer sheets and I bring those. And so these few supplies, we just pack in our suitcase and we take down their trash bags. We bring 10 trash bags. Like, I know how much of the household general supplies that we use inside of a week when we're at the beach. But again, with the follow through in the car on the way back or in the airplane on the way back now, I'll make notes. Was that the right amount that we needed? Because now we have a baby. We got a grandson with us. You know, the kids brought friends one year. We had extra people with us. Like, when the amount of people we take changes, do we need to bring different supplies? So remembering those things, remembering my visor, remembering anything. The only time I'm ever at a pool now is in Florida. Like, I don't go to a pool in Ohio. So anything that I'm going to need pool related, I forget that you need until I'm up on Sunday morning ready to walk down to the pool. I'm like, oh, I don't have a visor. I don't have my clips for my, you know, you just don't remember. These are the things that we have inside of the household operations binder, the operations that it takes to run your household. Electronics information goes in there. And then the last piece that I will tell you about the household operations binder, I used to have this in the reference binder, we'll talk about that next week, is mulch. So when we moved into our house, I've told this story, but it's been a while. When we moved into our house, which is like almost 30 years ago now, the woman before us had a ton of flower beds, tree beds. I grew up with a mother who also had many, many flower beds. And so I grew up weeding and mulching. And over the years, we have installed what Greg and I lovingly refer to as highway landscaping. So our yard is nice green grass with mulch and bushes and trees. That's it. If we have flowers, like we have daffodils, we have lilies, the flowers that we have are flowers that come back every year. So they come up, they bloom, they die, we cut them off, they're done. I don't plant anything. I don't fertilize anything. It's just highway landscaping. If you're driving down the highway and you see it, you might also see it in our yard. Well, the only maintenance you need to do with highway landscaping is getting your yard fertilized, and then one time a year, weeding the yard, putting down the preen, and putting down the mulch. And we needed a lot of mulch. When we moved in here, they used to drop a whole truckload, 6 yards of mulch. That's a lot of mulch. And I would always forget how much mulch we needed. So I would never order enough. And I would order whatever, however much I would order, we'd get half the yard done, I'd order again. And each time you had to order, it was another $50 delivery fee. And if you remember just a few minutes ago to the story of going to Florida, we didn't have an extra $50 for the delivery fee. So then we started going to mulch in bags, and Greg would drive the car up, minivan, to Lowe's. He'd get it full of bags and he'd bring it back and we'd unload them. He'd unload them onto the yard. I'd start to spread it while he went and got more. And I'd just keep spreading until I was like, okay, one more load of however many bags. That's how we did it for a while. So we'd know how many. And I was like, or Lisa, you could count 1 year and write it down so you remember the next year. Because every year I'd be like, okay, so it was whatever, 120 bags of mulch. And I'd be like, I'll remember that. And then the next year, how many bags of mulch was it? We had no clue. Back to the minivan, you get the idea. So finally I wrote it down. 6 yards of mulch was the first time I wrote it down. I was like, okay, we need 6 yards of mulch. Then, this is the brilliant part. We were so used to just trying to get enough mulch to mulch this yard. And we did do it every other year because you don't have to do it every year. But we've lived here 30 years. So this story, you know, it's got a lot of mulchings in it. So we got to the point where we're like, okay, 6 yards is what we need to do this yard. Or we said, we could start to eliminate these flower gardens. And at that point, there was this big, like, crescent-shaped area. We got rid of that one like in year number three. It had a couple of apple trees in it. It had an above ground vegetable garden. It had bushes and all of these things died. I was like, just get rid of all of it. We got rid of all of it and we just planted grass. So our backyard is now grass. It did not used to be grass. It used to be all these different gardens. In the back corner of our yard was a huge, huge bed that had these thorn trees in it. And the thorns on these trees were like 2 inches. They were very prickly. And then nothing could grow down there because it was shady when the trees were in bloom. And they dropped all these flowers and then they dropped all these leaves and it had this huge amount of mulch. I mean, I think we spread, I don't know, it was a huge amount. However you measure it, 1, 3, whatever I said before, it was like at least 1.5 of those. I was like, well, if we just cut these trees down, which I know you don't like to cut trees down, but these, I've got babies now. I'm like, they're going to step on these thorns. And it was not going to be good. So we cut down the trees and we planted grass. And the grass doesn't look perfect still to this day. Drives Greg crazy. But I'm very happy because I'm not weeding or mulching that area. We've gotten down to so few areas that we weed and mulch in this yard that it can literally get done in one weekend in the spring and we're done for the entire year. And to me, amen, that is what I want to do. Like, I just want to enjoy our yard and sit on the back patio and read a book. I do not want to be planting flowers and weeding and mulching for the entire summer. Like, I watched my mom do that. My mother-in-law loved to do it. It's just not my thing. And the household operations binder tells me how much mulch we need, which every year is lower and lower and lower. I actually went outside the other day to see if we could put grass anywhere else. And I think we are at our max amount of grass in this yard for it to still look like a house and not actually look like you just drove by on a highway. So the household operations binder. The household operations binder is the invisible work that you are doing in your household made visible. Most of what is in the household operations binder, people do not go to this level of recording and organization for. They just try to remember it in their head. And when you pull out this operations binder, it is you being the COO of your house. You running the meal planning and the cleaning schedule and the holidays and the yard work and the electronics and the travel and pets are in there. Like, all those things that make your house a home are in this binder. When you move to a new home, this binder goes with you. Like, this is your family. This is your traditions. These are the things that you want to remember. And establishing this binder in your 20s, 30s, and 40s really gives you a history and a reference for these events going forward in your 50s, 60s, and beyond. And I am really looking forward to building out the travel section of our operations binder over the next decade in the different kinds of travel that Greg and I want to do. International travel, domestic travel, weekend travel, day trips. I'm putting together some of my own adult homeschooling field trips for myself that I think my mom and I are going to go on because she likes to do that kind of stuff with me. And there are just things in the United States that I want to see that Greg doesn't want to see that he's like, no, I can skip that thing that you should have done in grade school. I'm like, okay, well, I'm going to go do it. And I'm collecting all of this kind of information. Where else do you put this? I'm going to put it in my household operations binder. Back in 2012, when I started Organize 365, it was an in-home professional organization company. And for the first 7 years, we organized people's homes, and then we started to specialize in organizing people's papers. And we made the most beautiful color-coded file cabinets you have ever seen. And then I would sell a maintenance package because no one knew how to maintain these file systems except for the person that created the file system, which was usually me. And over the years, I realized that file cabinets just flat out do not serve us anymore at all. And the reason why is because, number one, there's no constraint. Like, you could just get another file cabinet. Like, there's no stopping file cabinets from multiplying. Secondly, no one knows how to organize them. Even professional organizers don't know how to organize them because file cabinets organize your papers based on papers going in files of whatever name of that paper is. There's no like medical drawer, file drawer, financial drawer, household reference drawer. Like, you could do it that way, but again, you're back to no constraint. And the third and really most important reason why Organize 365 does not recommend file cabinets at all anymore for paper storage is because they're not portable. And in my experience, when I need to use paper, it needs to be portable. I need to go to the lawyer to settle my dad's estate. I need to go to the school to advocate for my kids. I need to take the medical binder to put in the reports for my mother-in-law's latest fault. Like, I need the paper that I use to advocate for myself and my family when I am with another professional that is almost always never in my home. And so for that reason, Organize 365 encourages you to ditch your file cabinet. You can go get the book, The Paper Solution. It's available in Audible, Kindle, or hard copy. I would counsel against getting the Kindle version just because there are some really great tables and things that are in the hardcover book that you would be able to follow along if you're going to make your own binders and ditch your file cabinet. And Organize 365 has the easy button for you. So if you want to press the easy button, just order the paper solution from Organize 365. We will mail you all four physical binders and you'll get emailed digital downloads that you can reprint of the workbooks that we put inside of the binders. And you will save a little bit of money if you do the paper solution and get a whole bunch of extra bonuses. Those extra bonuses are online dashboard access, where I have multiple videos of each binder, how to assemble them, what to put in them. You get to see my binders and how I use them. You'll also be part of a group inside of our community app where we answer your questions about organizing your paper. Inside of the dashboard, you'll have available to you editable PDFs for those physical binders. So if you like to do things digitally, you will be able to fill in the editable documents so that you could share them with your family that are also helping you advocate for your loved ones. And there's a virtual on-demand paper organizing retreat. So you can pretend like we're right there with you as you're sorting through your paper piles. Paper is not going away. Here in America, we are going to use paper forever. And the reason why is because the minute that you're born, you get two little pieces of paper to keep track of for the rest of your life and after, which are your Social Security card and your birth certificate. At the moment of birth, the paper race is on. We are here to help you successfully run that race. Use paper in the powerful way it is meant to be to help communicate the knowledge that we all know that you have to the professionals that are helping you live your best life. Just head on over to the Organize 365 shop and check out the paper solution there.